Okay, welcome everybody to our call today called How to Evolve Your Brain. My name is Damien Sen and it's a great pleasure having you on the call today. In a few moments from now, I'll be introducing our very special guest, Dr. Joe Dispenza. But before I do, please allow me to share how this call will work today, particularly if this is your first peopleyoushouldmeet.com call that you've tuned into. Now, we're going to be on the call for around about an hour, and over the course of the hour, I'll be asking Dr. Joe a whole series of different questions on our topic. Some of the questions will be my own, but the vast majority of questions will have actually been submitted in through the site by you, our listeners. Now, I first came across Dr. Joe Dispenza's work in the hit movie called What the Bleep. Now, I'd heard that What the Bleep had created quite a storm in the US and eagerly awaited it to be shown in the UK, and I literally went and saw it as soon as it hit the screens and was really blown away by the level of wisdom and consciousness that actually came through that film, and was touched by many of the speakers who shared their wisdom. Now, the person that had the biggest impact on me was actually Dr. Joe Dispenza, and the piece of, or the material that really inspired me the most was his sharing his approach to actually creating his world by creating his day on a daily basis, and was really inspired and touched me very deeply and has had a profound impact on the way that I navigate my own life day to day. Now, I also just wanted to quickly at this stage mention a special mutual friend, Pavel, who actually made this interview possible so that you can all benefit from these teachings as well. Now, over the past 10 years, Dr. Joe Dispenza has lectured in over 17 different countries on 6 continents, educating people about the role and function of the human brain. He has taught thousands of people how to reprogram their thinking through scientifically proven neurophysiologic principles. He is the author of the book Evolve Your Brain, The Science of Changing Your Mind. And without further ado, it gives me great pleasure to welcome to the call our very special guest, Dr. Joe Dispenza. How you doing there, Joe?
Very good, Damien. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Welcome. Now, Joe, I thought we'd just start at the very top by just exploring the topic Evolve Your Brain. I was just wondering if you could share with people what evolving the brain actually means and why it's so important.
Well, there's a new concept in the last 15 years, Damien, in neuroscience called neuroplasticity. And plasticity tells us that when we learn new things and we experience new events, when we change the way we think, that we actually upscale the hardware of the brain to reflect our very intentions. And there's really two basic ways that we actually evolve the circuitry in our brain. One is from learning information. Every time you learn something new, you forge a new synaptic connection in your brain. Remembering, however, is maintaining and sustaining those connections. And some of the research that was done by the Nobel Prize laureate Kandel in the around year 2000, he proved that, you know, we could double our connections in our brain, but by learning new things. But if we don't repeat them and we don't make them memorable, those connections actually fade away. So the idea then in evolving our brain is to learn new things and remember them, make them stick. The second way we actually evolve the hardware of our brain or enrich the circuitry is from new experiences. When we learn new things, when we're in the midst of a novel experience, everything we're seeing and smelling and tasting and feeling and hearing, all of our 5 senses, they're gathering vital information from the environment. And that information is rushing back to the brain through 5 different pathways, and it's causing jungles of neurons to organize themselves to reflect the external event. The moment they organize themselves to reflect the event, they release a chemical, and that chemical is called a feeling. So we begin to record our events in the environment emotionally. So it begs the question then, if you're not learning anything new and if you're not having any new experiences, then are you evolving, you know, your being? And, of course, the answer is no, and that we're left with, in fact, just the old circuits that are related to past experiences, of course, that then keep causing us to create the same things in our life.
Mm. Interesting. Now, I actually just wanted to, before we delve deeper into evolving the brain, first of all, just ask you, what was it that actually brought you to this body of work? What was it that actually inspired you to dedicate 20 years of your life studying this material and then sharing it with people around the world?
Well, unfortunately, I think with human beings, for the most part, one of the things that helps us change the fastest is when we're confronted with crisis or trauma. And back in the mid-80s, I got run over by a truck in a triathlon and wound up breaking 6 bones in my back and had to make a choice to either take a conventional route and have a radical surgery because the prognosis basically said I probably would never walk again, or to break from convention, to break from the current beliefs and see if I could actually make a change on a personal level. And so I chose the latter and, of course, happy that I did. And in those moments where I began to contemplate and think about this power that's in every human being that's, you know, both personal and universal, that if we can make contact with it and begin to give it a plan or give it some template or some designs, and then get out of the way and surrender, you know, to a greater mind, maybe, you know, it would do the healing for me. And I think I was innocent enough and simple enough at the time. And, of course, I wasn't going anywhere because I couldn't, to actually put all of my effort into it. And I said, you know, I'm not going to let any thought go by that I don't want to experience. And I began to realize how unfocused and how untrained my mind really was. But over the course of several weeks, I began to notice some measurable changes in my body and in my health. And the moment I could correlate with what I was doing inside of me with the results that were being produced outside of me, I think I made a strong correlation at that point.
Mm. And now you mentioned, Dr. Joe, just the power that's present inside every human being. From your experience with working with people across the world, is change something that every single human being can engage in, or is it really just reserved for people that have special talents or abilities?
No, actually, there's 2 points to that, Damien, that I want to be very clear on. First point is that if you're alive and you're a human being, you're not excluded from the quantum field, that field of intelligence that's both within you and all around you, that everybody has access to, is available, and it's the same intelligence that keeps your heart beating and digesting your food and organizing, you know, hundreds of thousands of functions in 1 second in one cell of your body. I mean, it's a big mind here that people begin to become so distracted by their external world that they spend very little attention giving it attention. And so this intelligence is so allowing that if we're happy being unhappy, then of course it reinforces who we're being. So what's happening now, I think, culturally and globally is that people are beginning to, because of information, to want to be better, to want to really to improve their life. And the one element that gives us the real, real edge is our mind. And everybody, I believe, secretly believes in their greatness. And they secretly believe in their potential. But now here's the problem, is that most people wake up and they think the same thoughts. They get out of bed the same way. They brush their teeth with the same hand. They wash themselves in the shower. They look at themselves in the mirror to remember who they are. They go to work the same way. They see the same people that push the same emotional buttons. And they hurry up home and check their emails and hurry up and eat and then hurry up, you know, and go to bed so they could hurry up and do it again. And in fact, we could say that it's the environment that's activating different circuits in their brain. It's the external world that's causing them to think. And as long as you recognize the familiar people and you do the same things and you go to the same places and you have the same experiences, you know, the mind hasn't changed at all. You're making your brain fire in the same sequences and the same patterns and the same combinations. And the principle in neuroscience says that nerve cells that fire together wire together. So you literally become wired to your external environment. And as the environment then, with all its familiar known external cues, activate different circuits in your brain and you react thinking equal to the environment, that you keep creating more of the same environment. And to change then, to truly change, is really to think greater than the environment. And that takes an act of will. But every great person in history, whether it was Gandhi or Martin Luther King or William Wallace or Joan of Arc, they all had this vision, this idea. They all had a dream. And they began to live as if their dream was already happening. They were uncompromising. So the question is, can you believe in a future that you can't see or experience with your senses, but you've thought about enough times in your mind that your brain has literally changed to look like the event has happened?
Mm.
And that kind of concept begins to break down our materialistic, you know, sensory-driven experience of reality, that when we're holding on to a concept independent of the obstacles in our life, now we're calling forth on something greater. And when people, in the great individuals in history, understood this, there became an unseen hand that began to orchestrate change both within them and all around them.
Mm. Amazing. Now, lots of people are talking about like the increased levels of consciousness here on planet Earth. And I was just wondering if you could actually explain what's happening there from a neurological, neuroscience, and brain functioning point of view. I guess, like, how are people, or the brain specifically, interacting with this field of intelligence in a way that's actually, in, I guess, allowing people to enhance the consciousness of their mind?
Well, I mean, you know, we're always moving in and out of the quantum field. That, you know, in fact, the expression of physical body is really an illusion. We're all gravitationally organized energy. We're patterns of information. And these patterns of information called physical bodies are vibrating at a certain level, and that the body is moving in and out of the quantum field many times per second. And every time it goes into the field, it gains information, and every time it comes out, every time it goes into the information, it brings information into it. Every time it comes out, it takes information out. And so if you have a group of people that are questioning the nature of reality, if you have a group of people learning information, if you have people beginning to explore possibilities and ask bigger questions, there is a momentum that's being created that is beginning to shift the very nature of a potential future. And so I think this is a really relevant time in history, because most of the systems, most of the paradigms are beginning to be broken down, Damien. If you look at the economic model or the political model or the religious model or the health model or the medical model or the environment, we're beginning to see that all these different systems have been built on an old paradigm that no longer serves all of humanity but serves a select few. And so because people are experiencing, because of information, a clearer understanding of the way the reality really is, there's a strong intellectual division going on. Some people are holding on to those old beliefs, and you know, that's you know, allowing them to filter reality equal to their level of mind. But a lot of other people are beginning to say, no. There, no one is separate from this equation, and I don't actually believe the old texts, and I don't believe the political model anymore. And deception and greed and all these things are beginning to rise to the surface, and people now are beginning to want answers. And so we can't go on doing the same thing and expecting a different result in our life. And so when we get uncomfortable enough, I think, when as a human being begins to get so uncomfortable because of their external world, it's when people begin to make different choices. And so what happens in the brain literally is that we have three brains, three individual brains that allow us to go from thinking to doing to being. The first brain, the neocortex, that's that walnut-shaped brain on the outside there. That's the seat of the intellect. It's where we, our conscious awareness exists. And when we learn new things and we gather information from the environment, we forge a new connection in that thinking brain. So you learn a bit of information, you learn a little theory, you learn some facts, you learn some knowledge, and it's all stored in the thinking brain as a certain degree of philosophy. Now, when you take that knowledge, whether you read a book on how to ride a bicycle or how to build a doghouse or how to cook Chinese food or, you know, how to be compassionate, all that information is just philosophy. Now, if you take that and you apply it and you personalize it, if you can demonstrate it, if you can modify your behavior in some way, you can change your actions, the moment you change your actions, you're going to have a new experience. And when you have a new experience, you activate the second brain, the limbic brain or the emotional brain or the chemical brain. Mm-hmm. And the moment you modify your behavior and you have that experience, the experience from your environment then teaches your body what your mind intellectually understood. So you say knowledge is for the mind and experience is for the body, and you have two brains working together. Now, getting people to go from thinking to doing, getting their behaviors to match their intentions, getting their actions equal to their words, getting them to make a different choice is really the concept of change. And it's like herding cats for most people because they would rather stay in their intellectual realm. So they have, in a sense, they have mind doing one thing and we have a body doing something else. As an example, a politician may say, I'm saying this, I'm presenting myself this way, I'm espousing this theory or this philosophy, but my body is doing something completely different. You can go to church and you can shake hands with a person and you can say, peace be with you. Then you can get in the car and you can cut everybody off and be the first one out. It's mind and body working in opposition. So when you read the book on compassion and you learn that information and you contemplate on it and you think about it, you're actually forcing your brain to work in new sequences and new patterns and new combinations. You're literally making a new mind. You're putting the hardware in place ahead of the actual experience. So then when you get in the experience and you actually have to do something differently, you have the circuits in place. Mm-hmm. And when you forgive somebody or you do exactly what you've read or what the book says, and you have a new feeling called compassion, now you're instructing or teaching your body what your mind has understood. In fact, you're embodying knowledge. The word has become flesh. And this is where, in history, have to begin to make changes. This is where people have to demonstrate greatness. They have to demonstrate profundity. They have to begin to rise up and be individuals. But it's not enough to do it once. We have to be able to repeat the experience. And when we can replicate any experience over and over again and make it look natural and easy and second nature, we activate that third brain called the cerebellum. And when we've practiced it enough times, we could say that we neurochemically memorize an internal order that's greater than any external environmental cue. So when you're able to memorize something till it becomes subconscious or unconscious, you're in a state of being. That means that mind and body are now one because you've done it so many times. And when you're in a state of being, we could say that no person, no thing, no experience will move you from that memorized internal state. And a great example of that is if you can't consciously remember a phone number, but you pick up the phone and your hand dials the number. Well, how did that happen? You couldn't consciously remember it, but you practiced it so many times that your body knew as well as your brain. Now, 95% of who we are by the time we're 35 years old sits in those subconscious automatic program memory system in which we've memorized a set of behaviors or emotional reactions that become part of our personality. So the idea then is to unmemorize those unwanted traits that bring us to our lowest denominator and then begin to redesign or reinvent a new aspect of self until it becomes a new state of being.
Mm-hmm. Now, Joe, one of the challenges that I see with people moving from that space of thinking about doing something to actually doing it to then becoming or being that thing that they desire is the social constraints or the conditions that they find themselves in with their tribe, whether it's their friends, their family, their work environment. How do you actually, what inspiration can you give to people who find themselves up against some kind of cultural constraint to actually make that breakthrough and step into that more individualized way of being?
Well, I think everybody is pressed by their environment in some way. How else do we learn? How else do we identify with who we are? We look in the mirror, and when we look in the mirror, we get a reflection, and that's called our identity. And as long as we can see ourselves, we know who we are. But how does the ego or the personality, how does the soul begin to define itself? Well, the reflection is our environment. So every condition that we have in our life, every circumstance that challenges us, was there to challenge us to change something about ourselves intrinsically. Now, herein lies the problem, because, genetically speaking, to be ostracized or cast out from the tribe, to be separate from the whole, of course, is probably one of the major fears of human beings.
Mm.
Yet, greatness, true individuality, is where every person actually went against the current beliefs of the time. So my belief, Damien, is that if we took ourselves every single day, I mean, the hardest part of change, the bottom line is to make time to do it. Most people don't make time for themselves, and so they're washed by their external world. If you woke up every morning and you asked yourself, what is the greatest expression of myself that I can be today? How do I not want to think? How do I not want to act? How do I not want to feel? Let me remember, let me become conscious of my unconscious self. Since 95% of who we are sits in that subconscious or unconscious program, let's go into the operating system and bring that level of self to our awareness so that we can begin to restrain certain behaviors and become familiar with or aware of unconscious streams of thought and begin to remember what emotions, you know, confuse us. And as we begin to observe the old self in terms of how we think, act, or feel, that process of self-awareness, that process of metacognition literally cools the circuits off in our brains so that no thought goes by unnoticed or no thought goes by that we don't want to experience in our waking day. We've literally primed our brain by cooling off the old self. In other words, nerve cells that no longer fire together no longer wire together. Mm. And then if you said, now what is a greater expression of myself that I'd like to be? Who in history do I admire? What would I like to be today? How would I walk? How would I breathe? How present could I be? Who could I forgive? How would I behave? What would I, you know, what would I express? What could I memorize internally that would be greater than the environment? And if you begin to think about this in new ways, and you begin to, instead of getting up and doing the same thing you do every day, reproducing the same level of mind, you begin to make your brain work in new and different ways by forcing it to fire in new sequences and new patterns and new combinations. Anytime you make the brain work differently, you're making a new mind. You're changing your mind. So in a sense, as you begin to reinvent a new aspect of self, you're literally cultivating a new set of circuits that will become the very platform. You've warmed up new areas of your brain to begin to use them in your waking day. Now, if you said to yourself, I'm not going to get up until I am this person, we would say then that if you allowed the thought of what you were deciding to become to literally become the experience, in other words, you became so involved with what you were thinking about that the thought literally became your experience. You were so immersed in your fantasy. Mm-hmm. You're so immersed in your dream, you're so immersed in your vision that the brain didn't know the difference between the internal or the external world. The moment that happens, what happens is as the thought becomes the experience produces an emotion, and your body is literally getting signaled chemically to think it's in the experience ahead of the actual experience. Now you have mind and body working together. You're in a state of being, and all you did was sit there and cultivate up a new mind and begin to change the physiology of your body. Mm. Now, the beauty behind that is if you could say, I got to memorize the state and be able to reproduce that same state of mind and body, we could say by the quantum law that if you could maintain that state of mind and body your entire day, something should show up differently in your life, and it should come in a way that you least expect, that surprises you, that wakes you up from your unconscious state so that you can correlate what you did inside of you that produced the result outside of you. Now we're moving from that concept of cause and effect, you know, Newtonian physics of something outside of you producing a reaction inside of you, internal chemical change, and paying attention to what caused it, to actually making an internal change and then looking to see what effects it does outside of you. That's quantum.
Mm. You put up a very interesting observation that I've made in my own life. I guess in times of these great moments of flow, I've experienced things coming to me that were so far out of my imagination. And I just liked what you said there about being surprised by what comes back from that field, like setting the intention, bringing mind and body together, and then looking to see what shows up. And often, like a lot of people say that they don't like surprises, but I actually quite like the fact that you can be surprised and tantalized and engaged in life and by what it brings back.
Well, the brain loves surprises, whether we like it or not. The research in neuroscience shows that when you're surprised by an event, and they're actually considering surprise as one of the fundamental emotions, just that most people don't have it enough, so they can't classify it as that. But when you're surprised, we could say then that moment where you're taken out of redundancy and you're taken out of routine and familiarity, the newness or the novelty of that moment literally changes your internal chemistry. And that moment of it happening in that very second literally reprograms the brain and body neurochemically. So then it begs the question, how many, you know, surprises have you had lately? And if you haven't, we can probably guarantee that most people fall into a state of unconscious oblivion.
Mm. Absolutely. Okay, Joe, I mentioned earlier on in the call that we've had questions come in from all around the world, so I just thought I'd actually kick off and ask one from Susie, who is in the United Kingdom. And Susie asks, if we get rid of all these reactive patterns and references to bad and sad times in our past, will we completely lose our personality and character, or will that still have a chance to shine through? I dread the idea of us all turning out the same.
Well, this is like two bottles of wine and 4-hour conversation. But let's make it simple, okay? There's nothing wrong with emotional reactions. Emotions actually color our life. And in fact, when we're experiencing emotions or when we're creating, emotions are the fuel that drive our, you know, our very inspirations. Now, we said earlier that emotions are the end product of experience. So if you've memorized an internal emotional state that you re-experience every day, first of all, your body as the unconscious mind does not know the difference between the actual event in your external world that's creating an emotion or the emotion that you've memorized that you're fabricating on your own. And the body then, the repetitive conditioning of the body begins to force it to emotionally memorize that experience. Now, if that happens and you live by the same emotions every day and your feelings become your means of thinking, then if you're living in that same chemical state, you're actually reinforcing more of the past because the emotion, by definition, literally is a memory of the past. So the majority of human beings experience those profoundly negative emotions that are driven by the chemicals of stress, that anger and aggression, that hatred and judgment, the fear and anxiety and insecurity, pain and suffering, hopelessness, powerlessness. They're all literally chemicals that are driven by the adrenal system.
Mm.
And what happens long term is the body keeps getting knocked out of balance. Now, as the body begins to be knocked out of balance because of strong emotional conditions in our lives, the personality literally begins to become fragmented. As a matter of fact, you become less like yourself because different parts of the brain begin to compartmentalize and not communicate holistically. So a person has almost, in a sense, small facets of a multiple personality that they're able to function with. Now, as we begin to unmemorize these emotions and break the habit of being ourselves, the amazing thing happens is that instead of losing our personality, we begin to experience more of a wholeness. We become more unified. We become more complete. We become more calm. We become more orderly. We become more peaceful. We become more intentional because those emotions that are strong stimulators are actually forcing the body to become the mind. And that's what a habit is. A habit is when the body is the mind. So as people begin to make personal changes, if they pick one of those emotions, whether it's anger or frustration or hatred, if they begin to change their very states when they've lived in those particular propensities, when you begin to change anger, you become less frustrated. When you become less frustrated, you become less, hateful and less judgmental, and the cycle goes on. So No, you don't actually lose yourself. What happens is you become more of yourself, more whole and more complete. And that intelligence that gives us life, that's keeping our heart beating and digesting our food, that infinite intelligence that every human being is connected to actually begins to spring out of us. It begins to move through us. It begins to leak out of us. And we become more like it, an individual, but not run by those very primitive emotions.
Mm. Excellent. That's a great question, Susie. Now, this one actually comes from Maureen, who is in New Zealand. And Maureen asks, what checks can you put in place to stop from slipping back into old habits?
Mm. Well, the process of change really is a two-part process. The process of change is actually unlearning something about yourself and relearning something new about yourself. It's about losing one mind, you know, losing your mind and creating a new one. It's about breaking the habit of the old self and reinventing a new self. In neuroscience, it's called pruning synaptic connections or sprouting or flourishing new connections. It's about unmemorizing an emotion and then reconditioning the body to a new mind or to a new emotion. So the only thing that we have to rely on to begin to make change is first our level of awareness. Consciousness is awareness, and awareness is paying attention, which means that most of our waking day, most people go unconscious because they turn on automatic programs that run their very behaviors and their very attitudes and streams of consciousness. So waking up in the morning or before you go to bed at night and reminding yourself who you don't want to be and then reminding yourself who you do want to be. The whole purpose of meditation is to get beyond the analytical mind so you can get into those subconscious programs to change them to more functional ones. So becoming aware of when we go unconscious is usually the first step. It is the first step where we can say, I want to change my energy. Remember, emotions are energy in motion. So in order to change your life, you have to change your energy. So if you're living by the same energy every day, don't expect anything different to happen in your life. If you can get up as a new ideal and energetically be different, you know, the way you're thinking and feeling as a result of that energetic change influences every single atom in your life. Now, here's the rewards of that, that as you can begin to make observations about just small shifts in your energy, and it may not happen for 2 or 3 days, but journal it. Pay attention. Look, I was in a state of absolute joy today, or I was living as a wealthy woman, or I was living as a healthy man, and I didn't care what was going on in my life. I maintained that state. After a few days, things should begin to reorganize themselves. At the end of your day, which is profoundly important, you should always ask yourself the question, how did I do? When did I fall from grace? When did I go unconscious? When did I lose vision? And then begin to realize, when you can begin to reflect, when you moved off the mark, what was the cause of it? What was it? Was it an emotion? Was it a person? Was it a particular incident? What was it? And then begin to think about, if you had the same circumstance present itself to you in your life, how would you do it differently? What changes would you make? Now, that self-correcting process allows you to move literally, you know, if you're not knee-jerking in the same way every single day and you're making small, subtle choices, you're literally moving to a new line of time every time you make a different choice, and that's quantum physics. That's how you wind up in a new life.
Excellent answer. And excellent question, Maureen. Now, this one comes from Bob, who is in the United States, and Bob asks, I am committed to healing my body with my mind. I have type 2 diabetes. Please lay out a sequence of activities for me to follow to affect long-term change in my brain in relation to this disease. I'm very
okay, this is what I'm going to tell Bob. Bob, you need to come to one of my workshops. Because I will give you the exact tools on how to do it, and I will talk to you about people who have actually overcome type 2 diabetes. Genes, in a sense, are on and off switches, and you can turn on new genes and turn off old genes. And the way you change your genes as you change the way you think and feel and behave. So type 2 diabetes is literally a lifestyle problem, that it's created by specific choices with actions and emotions, especially the survival emotions, and the redundancy of the same thoughts and making the same choices. So there was a man in my workshop in Vancouver, let's see, what weekend, 2 weekends ago, that healed himself of type 2 diabetes. And listen, your personality creates your personal reality. Your personality is made up of how you think, act, and feel. If you change the way you think, act, or feel, if you change your personality, you should experience a new personal reality, which means you're going to have to become conscious of the ways you shouldn't act, shouldn't think, shouldn't choose, and shouldn't feel. Now, this process takes a certain amount of knowledge. It takes a certain amount of information for people to begin to see what's possible. The knowledge is the precursor to experience, and the more information, the more knowledge you have, the more prepared you are for an experience. So I'll give you a little hint, and that is that most people who overcame type 2 diabetes, they decided to break the habit of their old self and then reinvent a new self, and they began to make choices that led to a different outcome. And I'll leave it at that. And Chapter 2 of Evolve Your Brain has all the information on the outline steps on how to do that. My second book, called Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself, How to Lose Your Mind and Create a New One, which should be out in a couple months, has the absolute steps outlined for you, and you can sink your teeth into that.
Cool. Excellent. Thanks, Bob, for that question. Okay, this one comes from Gina in the United Kingdom. And Gina asks, what techniques can we use to really hone in on the details of visualizing? What are the processes you have used with clients to really help them design a clear virtual experience?
Well, the privilege of being a human being is that we can make thought more real than anything else. And we do it all the time. Now, where we place our awareness and for how long determines our destiny. Now, I don't really like to use visualization that much for two reasons. The first reason I don't like to use the word visualization is because a lot of people, when they think about visualizing, they don't think they can see anything in their mind, especially men. And so you say to them, hey, visualize this, and they say, I don't see anything. But you say, can you imagine hitting a golf ball, or can you concept yourself, you know, hooking a fish? And for the most part, it's a conceptual thing. And the other reason is that when you tell people to visualize, all of a sudden they make these sharp turns and they're swimming with the dolphins or with aliens in outer space, and they've lost their very intention. I like to use the word mental rehearsal. Mm-hmm. And mental rehearsal means concepting or reminding yourself who you want to be. The latest research actually shows that when you have people rehearse something repeatedly, that they grow brain circuitry. The brain does not know the difference between the external world and the internal world if you're paying attention to what you're doing and you're repeating it. So in the workshops that I do, and I'll be in London the end of May, we go through quite a bit of information to give people the tools and the resources to begin to understand how the brain works, how we can put the hardware in place to look like the brain has had the experience. In addition, if we can move into a state of mind in which we're able to repeat it every single time, the body will begin to change literally to look like it's already experienced the event. Now, when the brain and the body have changed to look like the event has happened, the signal in the quantum field says that the event has happened because the body's actually registered ahead of the physical experience. Now, when your brain and body change to look like or reflect the event has happened, that's when the experience finds you. That's when you've already experienced it enough times that you literally draw the experience to you in a way that you could never predict. So, again, we'll go over that when I'm in the United Kingdom in the end of May.
Awesome. Thanks for that, Gina. Okay, this one comes from Andy, who is in the Netherlands. And Andy asks, what would be the most powerful step you could take towards evolving your brain?
Well, one of the most profound things you can do with, you know, in terms of evolving your brain is actually to do things differently every single day. If you keep doing things differently, if you stay neuroplastic, you keep your brain really flexible and really loose. And if you're able to change your behaviors, you're going to have new experiences. And those new experiences then literally switch new genes on and turn new genes off. As an example, if you take a group of volunteer rats and you put them in three different categories, and one rat set of rats is in just a normal rat environment with a cage and a wheel and some water and some wood chips, and you compare the rat's brains that are in, first of all, a deprived environment where there's just food and water, and an enriched environment where there's toys and swings and there's horns and there's levers to press for food and there's other siblings in there and there's mirrors and tunnels to crawl through. And you ask those rats if you want to donate their brains to science after 3 months, the rats in the enriched environment will have not only denser brains, in other words, more gray matter, they'll have more circuits, more neurons, more neurotransmitters, and more of a chemical called neurogrowth factor, which is the sprouting mechanism to actually influence brain growth. So most people, by the time they're 35 years old, pretty much experience all that life has to offer. They've experienced, you know, most of the circumstances or experiences in their life, and they resign to their feelings because their feelings really determine what's going to happen next. They start to anticipate what life is going to be like based on the barometer of emotions. Mm. So learning simple things and then being able to demonstrate them, as we talked about earlier, is the most profound way we begin to develop not only more circuits and evolve our brain, but in fact greater sense of joy and less stress. Mm.
That's excellent advice. And thanks, Andy, for that question. Now, this one actually comes from Hermias in Namibia. Now, hello to all our listeners in Namibia. Now, this question is, some people wish with all their heart to change their ideas, lifestyles, and mindsets, but some important factor or ingredient which should propel them into action to do just that appears to be missing. What is that missing factor, and how do you obtain it?
Mm. Wishing never changes anything. From a neurophysiological standpoint, wishing has no effect on the body and the brain, because wishing actually implies that you're separate from the actual event you want to experience. Now, I'm going to talk about this a little bit, because the one ingredient that allows us to begin to make profound changes in our mind and body is when we come out of our resting state, where we become inspired. When you're inspired, you're seeing a landscape, you're seeing a future without any obstacles. Now, you and I and most of the people that are listening actually believe that we need a reason for joy. We have been hypnotized and conditioned that we need a reason for gratitude, that we need a reason for love. In other words, something outside of us has to stir us up and make us feel differently. That's, again, the very Newtonian principle. If you're able to bring that emotion up of inspiration or gratitude or joy, independent of the environment, or, in other words, not reliant on the environment, and you're able to memorize that state, be prepared for very unusual things to happen in your life, because you're going from effect to the very nature of cause. So most people live their life relying on television to make them think and feel, relying on the internet to stimulate them emotionally, something outside of them to change their internal state. It could even go as far as gambling or drugs or video gaming or shopping. It doesn't matter. It's something outside, a new car, something outside of us has to make us feel good. And so we begin to live thinking that when we have these things or we reach these certain experiences, then we're happy. And that's a very old model of creation. It actually never works. In other words, I'll be happy when I have these things. That's not quantum at all. In fact, you have to begin to condition your body to think it's already experiencing the event emotionally, so the body begins to reflect its very changes before the experience. Now we're getting quantum. So most people wait for tragedy or crisis or trauma in their life to really begin to get about the business of creation or change. In other words, when things get so bad that you can't go on business as usual, when their back is against the wall, then they say, okay, My conscience has already been telling me this all along, but I didn't pay attention to it, but now I got to start making some changes.
Mm.
Well, why wait for crisis? Why wait for trauma? Why wait for difficulty? Why not choose yourself to get up every single day or before you go to bed at every night, or eliminate the environment for a period of time and begin to truly create? As I said in the very beginning of this interview, the most difficult part of all of this is making time for our precious selves, making time to choose ourselves and be loving enough to ourselves to begin to get clear on what we want. You know, that's what intention is. And then begin the process of creation and surrender the outcome. Don't try to control it, but surrender it to some force, some intelligence that's bigger than us, some power that's universal, and then begin to experiment with life. And when you start to notice those changes, you're going to be inspired to do it again the next day.
Mm. Awesome. Now, I guess there's been lots of debate and discussion on moving away motivation versus moving towards. And I guess in this new world of heightened levels of consciousness, are you seeing a transference of more people adopting the moving towards way of being?
I think so. I think human nature is pretty complacent. We get comfortable and we're consumers and, you know, we go unconscious a lot of the time. But, you know, in this present moment in history, I really feel like people want to become empowered. And empowerment to me is knowing that I'm producing effects. If I know that I'm producing measurable effects in my life and I know that my mind had an element in it, I feel pretty empowered. And I'm going to want to empower others to do the same. So I think there's just a point right now in our human evolution where the veils, the illusions are being removed, and people are beginning to realize you don't have to be a certain race or a certain religion or a certain gender or a certain culture to really embark on an adventure. Actually, in fact, you just have to be alive and choose yourself.
Mm. Mm. Absolutely, wise words. And we have one last question that I'd like to ask from Trina in the UK. And Trina asks, I have changed almost all areas of my life and now just working on creating financial success. I'm building my business and know that the money is definitely coming. Already I feel so wealthy and abundant. What advice or technique can you suggest that I could use to attract more money into my life and my bank account? Thanks.
Memorize appreciation. Feeling. Memorize the feeling of wealth. Listen, wealthy people or people who have experienced tremendous success and the people that I studied, they all had adversity. They all had conditions in their life that would normal people would have stopped with. In other words, if you want your prayers answered, you better be ready to be worthy of having them answered. So as you begin to make a decision to be a wealthy woman and you decide to have all the things you want in your life, what you're really saying is you want freedom. You want absolute freedom to do whatever you want, whenever you want. And so if you're confronting those obstacles emotionally that keep forcing you to return back to the old self in your daily life, then you have to ask the question, what piece of knowledge can I apply to this situation so that I can change something about myself to produce a different result? In other words, the process of getting to wealth you think is about being wealthy, but in fact it's about you overcoming you. And as you begin to overcome you and you begin to make those internal changes, the side effect of you clearing and making room for that state called wealth, or however you see it in your mind, has everything to do with you, your own personal transformation. And when you reach that level of transformation, because you've kept integrating knowledge and you kept having your behaviors match your intention, as you kept reminding yourself of your vision, as you began to feel it emotionally in your body, if you can memorize that state and understand that the things that are happening now that may or may not produce the intent that you want is just an effect of what you're doing inside of you. And repeating it and spending time getting clear on what you want and romancing that dream and bringing it to life and surrendering it to a mind so much bigger than you. That's the fun part. It gets to be fun after a while, and it gets to be exciting. So my best advice for someone who is that far along in making those changes, I always say to myself, when something isn't showing up in my life in the way that I want it, there's some emotion that I'm holding on to that's keeping it frozen. Because if emotions are energy in motion, and I'm living by the same emotion every day, that means I'm freezing energy to stay stuck in my life, and there is no motion. So then as you begin to surrender that emotion, you surrender the energy. As you give up one level of energy and you turn it into another level of energy, that's when you begin to see a lot of motion in your life. Because if the energy is the same as the day before, and let's say it's sadness or pain or uncertainty, when that energy is released as an emotion, the same energy that is sadness is just changed into joy. It's the same energy. It's just that you put a different spin on it. So our purpose in life really is to not be wealthy or to be successful or to be popular or to be famous or to do the right things. The purpose is to be able to express that intelligence through us and then measure our own greatness by our own level of mind.
That's an amazing answer. And thank you, Trina, for the great question as well. Now, Joe, we're actually coming up to the end of our hour, and just really wanted to take this opportunity to thank you so much for sharing such a wealth of information and knowledge today. Like I said to people before the call, it was going to be a content-rich call, and it certainly has lived up to that promise. And I know people who have tuned in to the call will no doubt want to actually find out more about the work that you do and how they can actually follow your work more closely and stay in touch. And I was just wondering if you could actually share how people can find out more information about your work.
Well, my website is just drjoedispenza.com, D-R-J-O-E, Dispenza, D-I-S-P-E-N-Z-A.com. On that website, there is a couple features. There'll be a list of events. For example, as I mentioned, where am I this weekend? I'm in Ontario this weekend. I was in Denver last weekend. I'm going to be in London and Amsterdam in the Netherlands the last 2 weeks of May, doing a series of talks and workshops in the UK and in the Netherlands. And then I'm, in Europe in the summer, and you can look at the events calendar. People who are interested in following the work and actually learning the how-to, the workshops are really the key ingredient and the key element. There's also another feature called the live teleconference, which has become a huge, huge popular item on our website. And it's a subscription-based service. I think you pay $9.99 U.S. dollars, something like $9.99. And once a month, we do a live teleclass, where I talk for about 30 minutes or 20 minutes or so, and then we do questions. And it's a phone conference, but there's an internet service that goes along with it. And it's a real opportunity for people to have their questions answered, to develop a concept, and begin to work on one specific area so that people then can begin to apply it to their lives and track the changes that take place. There's a mailing list there if you want to subscribe to the mailing list to find out where I'm going to be and when I'm going to be there, when the new book's coming out or new products and on and on.
Okay, great. And just for people at home as well, just to give you a heads up about Dr. Joe Dispenza's dates in the UK, he will be actually appearing at Alternatives on the Monday, May 17th, kicking off at 7 p.m. for an evening talk. For those of you who don't know Alternatives, it's a phenomenal organization that's committed to sharing, empowering, and inspiring information. And you can actually find out more about Alternatives at alternatives.org.uk. Dr. Joe is also doing a one-day workshop with Alternatives as well. That's on the following Saturday.
Is it Saturday and Sunday, or is it just Saturday? I thought it was Sunday, too.
Okay, it could be the both days, kicking off on the Saturday. And that's in London as well, again, through Alternatives. On Tuesday, May 18, there is an event with the Tree of Life. which kicks off at 7 and completes at 9 p.m. and that's in Birmingham on May the 18th. And for people in Norwich, there is a date on Wednesday, May the 19th, where Dr. Joe will be speaking at the Yes Group in Norwich. And for more information on that, if you just go to yesgroupnorwich.org.uk. And also for our listeners in the Netherlands, Dr. Dispenza will be over there at the talk will be the biology of change, and it will be in Eindhoven. Is that the right pronunciation?
Yes.
On the Thursday, May 20th, and Amsterdam on Friday, May 21st. So that's just to give you a bit of a heads up for our European listeners. Awesome, Joe. So I guess I wanted to, first of all, just ask you, in terms of your own evolution, what sort of inspiring projects do you have on your horizon that you're evolving into that you can share with us?
Oh, wow. Well, what's happening now is we're doing some really great advanced workshops now for people who have done level one. We're doing a level two that's become really popular, where people can actually retreat from their life and spend a few days really wiring it in there and beginning to make changes. And level threes are now on the way. And, wow, there's all kinds of things going on with the movement of potentially other books that I want to do. So primarily, though, the interest is really advancing people's understanding that have been engaged in the information.
Awesome. And how is the process of writing your second book?
Well, we're close. I mean, you know, between, my editor sent me an email today, and I said, listen, the last time I checked my emails was last Wednesday at 6 o'clock in the morning, because I've been on the road and traveling and been at retreat centers where there's no internet and, you know, traveling back and forth and long days. So the commodity for me is making a little bit of time to just hone in on some last-minute chapters, and hopefully it's closer than we think.
Awesome. Cool. And for people at home in that space of really wanting to evolve their life and their brains, do you have any closing words of advice that you'd like to leave people with?
I think the biggest message for me is really about people believing in themselves, that you know, we edit out so much of reality because we choose our smallness instead of really deciding to be something else. And there's too much research now in biology and quantum physics and neuroscience and genetics that actually challenge the old belief systems, and that we can't even wait for science to give us permission to do the uncommon. We have to go out and do the uncommon, and we have to do it repeatedly, and we have to be able to demonstrate it so that science comes back to us and has to upgrade their laws, because we're defying the very nature of reality.
Well, Dr. Joe, I just really wanted to take this opportunity to thank you for your dedication in defying reality and continually evolving your own life experience, and then actually taking that step forward and sharing it with the world. It's certainly been an inspiring and engaging last hour for me, and I've grown tremendously as a human being, and I can only imagine that the people at home have had similar experiences today.
Well, thank you. It was an honor.
Cool. Now, for people who would like to listen to this call again, we have actually recorded it and we'll be making it available for free on the People You Should Meet website tomorrow. We have an archive there of 2.5 years of material of different speakers that have shared their wisdom. And the ethos of People You Should Meet is actually to serve humanity in this evolution of consciousness. So if you do feel moved or inspired to share these powerful teachings, I do encourage each and every single one of you to take that step forward and actually share this material with the important people in your lives. Often just by taking these small steps forward, as we explored in the call today, can actually have a tremendous impact in the world. Now, on the website recording pages, we've actually added in a whole series of different share functionality, which really make the ability to share this information really easy. So For those of you that are signed up on social networks such as Facebook or Twitter, just with a click of a button, you can actually take this material and share it with all your friends and really make a tremendous difference in people's lives. Awesome. So once again, thank you, Joe. It's been a fantastic last hour, and really appreciate your time today. And thank you, everyone at home.
Sure, my pleasure.
Take care.